Just to go over what we talked about this morning, because I think it's really important that, number one, we always keep in context whenever we start talking about the church and how the church needs to change or adjust or improve. A lot of times it's important that we understand that just as God doesn't change and the work of his followers don't change, the message, repentance, all of those things do not change. Those are constant. Those are consistent. It's just like how your body, you know, you still need blood, you know, you still need oxygen to breathe to live. The body of it in and of itself is not going to fundamentally change in any significant way. But we do have to make adjustments, just like our own bodies do make subtle changes over time. And I make that point because you will always stir up a lot of dust. And I mean, you will kick up a lot of dust when you start talking about church and how we need to change and adjust and do these different things. And immediately, people start going to very extreme ends of the spectrum. People start going into, you know, we need to change music, or why don't we have service at 4:30 in the morning, or, you know, maybe we need to, you know, do something. And it's always something extreme, but yet it's peripheral. It's something that changes the function that we may worship, or the way in which we do maybe teachings or things like that. Or well, why don't we live stream? And all of those things could be, depending on whatever group you're talking about, could matter. But at the end of the day, what really needs to fundamentally change when we do an assessment and adjust how effective the church is, what really needs to change is not only our hearts, but more specifically, how we view the function of the church. And when we started out in Matthew 18, I'll read it again, starting in verse 19. It says, "Again, truly I tell you that if two of you on earth agree about anything they ask for, it will be done for them by my Father in heaven. For where two or three gather in my name, there am I with them." And the question that I asked was very simply this, same question: who does God's church consist of, and how does it function? How does it grow? Because a lot of times when we think of the church, and as I pointed out in the very beginning of the book of Galatians, when it talked about to the churches in Galatia, this humongous region, this humongous territory, they didn't have what we have. Like, they couldn't just like fly to Chicago, fly to Atlanta, fly to Singapore, fly to London, and, you know, make a long distance phone call that connects within seconds. You know, they had to travel. They sent letters to these different churches that took weeks and months to get there. And then they would travel there, you know, some other given time. Church has changed, and even just the way that we gather. You know, you would have never seen in the first century church, or rarely would you see in the first century church, consistently where 50, 60 people get together and all come together and, you know, say, like, I remember one time Ben and I were talking to somebody about this. I forget who we were talking to. We were talking about how they have worship leaders, and they're like, I was talking to a friend of mine who literally, they started their church, and they're like, "We need a worship leader." And I was like, "What do you mean you need a worship leader?" He was like, "We need a worship leader. We need somebody who basically their role and function is to do the singing, do the song service, prepare everything that goes into what is otherwise known as corporate worship, meaning everybody get together in an open setting like what we do here in church and worship." Well, you didn't have any specifics anywhere in the Bible in the early church for a worship leader, because the function of that worship leader didn't exist. The same thing goes for when you have a lot of times in comparing now to back then, where you wouldn't see a fine line or demarcation or boldface about this is the role of an elder, this is the role of a deacon, this is the role of a pastor. When you start talking about how in certain translations they call them bishops, and how all these different names have different connotations that come with them. Part of the difficulty that we have in 2017 and current times is being able to understand that a lot of people serve their roles in totally different ways because the church has adjusted. So, for example, in our current congregation, you wouldn't just have somebody who's actually, first of all, just a paid minister necessarily. That isn't also one of the elders, one of the shepherds of the flock. You have these blended roles now. You have people that call themselves different things. You get into other denominations. I mean, you think it's convoluted here. You know, you get into other churches where it's like, oh my gosh, like they just come up with these titles, come up with different things. But the larger point that I'm making is if our efforts as the church is not to ultimately do what we see in the early church, which is to hold one another together, to build one another up, to spread the message, and to be effective in doing it. See, the reason why they did what they did was because it was effective. And what I find interesting is that I was talking to several of my friends from when I was in high school and in college, when I was much younger. And the church that we were a part of back then, this is back when I was in Cincinnati, and even when I was in Columbus, the church that we were a part of then, it was probably 800-900 people, okay? And I remember sometime back, it's probably a couple years ago, I had this conversation with Jonathan after church, because Jonathan was talking about church and how, you know, we need to really value small churches and intimate little smaller churches that aren't huge because they're more effective in really reaching people and getting to know people and whatever. And I only pointed out to him that it wasn't that I disagreed with the premise of us being intimate and us being close, but the idea that big churches can be that way. But just like what you see with, you know, Moses and how his father-in-law was a Jethro who says, you know what, you're doing too much. You got way too much going on. You need to delegate. See, a larger church with hundreds of people, you need other leaders, other people to step up, because it's not just, okay, well, we need somebody who can, you know, take care of certain responsibilities with getting people to come to church. It was more of a, we had a death ministry. So you literally had, like, at the very front of church, you had at least, you know, a couple dozen people who showed up every Sunday. And there was a lady, I remember her name. Her name escapes me at the moment. But she literally, for years, I remember the other guy who signed. His name was Roy Stevens. And Roy sat there, and he would sign, and he would sign, and he would sign. And sometimes Roy, who worked third shift, would be so tired that he would just be like, okay, come on in. And he would call, and she would jump in, and she would sign for him. You also had people who were over the team ministry. See, that's where I kind of cut my teeth, if you will, because it was this wonderful big church, and it wasn't that there wasn't enough people, but they had people who their entire focus and energy from a ministry standpoint was what is going to be best to serve and meet the needs of these young people, these people who are teenagers, people in junior high school. And it wasn't just that the church was big and so you were paying a bunch of people. No, I mean, you had more people who were actually full-time and committed to that work. But the larger point was, while our focus was on Sunday, and we definitely had, you know, excellent worship services, the main emphasis, even like on a Sunday night, they would have meetings, they would call them leaders meetings, and everybody who had responsibilities and duties within the church would come back together. And they would basically talk about areas of need that aren't being met, things that need to be done, because the work really started on following up after Sunday and going out and having what we call small groups in this church. You know, we call them family groups, call them Bible talks, different things. They all had different names. But the idea was that the church, just like in this passage, the church was found in those 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 people getting together and fellowshipping, having meals together, Because it's one thing to say, okay, you know what? I'm having marriage problems, so I need to schedule an appointment with this particular elder or this particular person because this is what they focus on and this is their duty in the church. It's another thing if you all just get a chance to go out to the beach, hang out for a few hours, talk about different things, and let things kind of come up as you go. And for a lot of us, in order to be able to really assess and say, what part of the body am I? What part of the body do I serve? Where am I best suited? And where can the needs be met outside of these four walls? We have to first understand that it has to be outside of these four walls. You know, there are people who come in here who have desperate, dire situations. They are really seeking, but they're not going to just walk in. Okay, Ben gets up, lead a few songs. We have communion. We have a sermon. And then everybody's just going to just fall out in the middle. So, okay, let me just share my life story. You know, or I'm really having this battle with this thing. Because, and it's not even a matter of pride or humility. It's a matter of sometimes people don't know where to begin. They don't know how to walk up to you and have that conversation. Now, we've been in church. I'm looking around here. Every last person in here I can see. We've been a part of churches pretty much our whole entire lives. And it's still like, okay, I'm going to have to see. Next time I see Kay, I'm going to talk to her about this. Or you know what? Tanisha said something to me 3 weeks ago. How am I going to bring this back up? I should have said something back then. All right, Tanisha, you got 5 minutes? Oh, she frowned. You know, like we do this now and we know each other. So imagine what people who have no idea what a meaningful prayer life is, no idea what it means to actually accept that grace and forgiveness. Imagine how they feel when they come in here and every last one of us looks like we're happy and we got it together. You know, like Gary and I sat down and we had lunch the other day and it was fun. It was great to kind of open up and talk outside of these four walls. That conversation, fortunately, I was wiped out and I had committed I wasn't going to do anything that day. And Gary's answer to "Are you available?" is "I'm off every day" because he's retired, right? And we literally sat there. Right.
I am busy.
There you go. He's busy, but he's retired. And we sat there. But this conversation went on and on and on and on. And I'm sharing my life. Like, Gary actually knows me now. Like, actually know. He could actually testify in court that I know some things about him, good and bad, right? We know each other a little bit, vice versa, right, you know? And the point is that that didn't happen. It couldn't. It wasn't going to happen here in most cases. Part of why, and I shared with you all a little bit about Ben and our conversation and going back and forth about the relative effectiveness or ineffectiveness of the church. Part of what we have to understand is that even if we all agree, like it says, we all agree on something, right? Even if we all agree that, you know what, we need to get better microphones, a couple guitars, Ben, he knows how to play piano. Even if we agreed on that, that does not change the fact that that's not changing anybody's life. That's not going to change our relationships. And so when you keep your eyes over here, it's very much like, and I talked about, you know, being a personal trainer. It's kind of like saying, I just need to eat better and cut all this sugar out and cut all these calories out. No, you need to take a walk. Or in some cases, you need to understand what that is doing to your body. You know, you need to understand how toxic that thing is that is happening to you. Ultimately, as the body, and I want to look at this really quickly just again, and we all know this one, but in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, ultimately, when we think of the body, what's so crucial, and I, in the interest of time, I went as long, like literally, I maxed out my time, but ultimately, when we think of the body, one of the things that we really have to remind ourselves on a constant, regular basis, because we're all individuals, like we all leave here, we go home, and then we have issues to tackle. Like I said, like Gary said, he's retired, but he got plenty of stuff to do. Why? Because he got kids and he got a bunch of daughters and they always need something, right? Something always broke. And now he's retired. They're like, I know my daddy loves me and he got time. Mm. And so what happens is we do this thing where we leave here and we forget that even when you leave, you're still a part of the larger body. And when we think about the body, think about how, like, I told you about this little hitch I got in my shoulder where every once in a while I'll do something like I just did. Like, I'll reach out for a bottle of water and it just feel like somebody stabbed me in my shoulder. And yet my foot's like, that ain't got nothing to do with me. Like, we work. Okay, you still standing. So I'm doing my job. I made the toes stand still, even though you flinched. But my foot still cares. My foot, if my foot could, and I'm not agile like this anymore, if my foot could reach up and help, I'm sure it would, but he's like, I can't. Just like there are some parts of the body that were probably looking at me struggling carrying all those boxes, and they were like, brother, I'm the foot, man. If I could help you, I would, but I can't help you with boxes no more. You know, the same thing happens when we think of certain needs in the church where you're like, you know what? I know Ben, Tanisha are going through something, or they're maybe what, I can't relate. That's just not my life. I don't have any experience in that. I'd help you if I could. I'm going to pray for you because I care. But what's important is that we understand that those parts of the body that we can reach, that can help the other part, like my foot can't do anything for my eye, but my index finger can. You know, my hair on my head really can't do a whole lot for my back. But, I mean, my shoulder blades can. Like, my back cares when my shoulders hurt. All of us are attached in that way. And the same applies even beyond, again, these walls, not just in the, I guess, from the aspect of reaching out and being involved and helping others in the community, but also, and I mentioned this, part of the reason why over the next few months we're going to have so many different guest speakers coming in is because we have to be concerned about the church, the larger church as a whole, and understand that we can't just be this isolated body. And there's a lot of reasons why that we'll go into later, but I want to look in 1 Corinthians 12 again and just read through this and just highlight a couple of things that are very important, some that we didn't get to earlier. Starting in verse 12, just as the body, though one, has many parts, but all its many parts form one body, so it is with Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit so as to form one body, whether Jews or Gentiles, slave or free. And we were all given the one Spirit to drink. Even so, the body is not made up of one part, but of many. Now, if the foot should say, because I am not the hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not, for that reason, stop being part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not the eye, I do not belong to the body, it would not, for that reason, stop being part of the body. If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? But in fact, God has placed the parts of the body, every one of them, just as he wanted them to be. If they were all one part, where would the body be? As it is, there are many parts, but one body. The eye cannot say to the hand, I do not need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker and indispensable, and the parts that we think are less honorable, we treat with special honor. And the parts that are unpresentable are treated with special modesty, while our presentable parts need no special treatment. But God has put the body together, giving greater honor to the parts that lacked it, so that there should be no division in the body, but that its parts should have equal concern for each other. If one part suffers, every part suffers with it. If one part is honored, every part rejoices with it. All of this goes back to the baseline understanding of what it means to be a part of the church, what it means to be a part of the body, and how it says there, and I love how it says at the very end of what I just read, its parts should have equal concern for each other. Now, this is easily seen, and I thought about this because I'll be honest with you, and I shared this with, I think, somebody. One of the things that's been weighing on me, now I'll get up here every Sunday, you know, and I look around and I kind of take inventory a lot of times of who's here, who's not here, who I recognize, new faces and everything. Now, I don't know what I can do. Let's just say I'm the thumb, okay? If I'm the thumb, I don't know what I can do to affect change in this other part, this other section of the body. But it doesn't mean I'm not concerned about it. One of the things I shared about how I haven't seen Neil in a few weeks. Now, I don't know if Neil's tired, sick. I don't know what's going on with him. Maybe he's just dragging. I talked to Mary Catherine. But here's the thing. It's concerning me. It's eating at me. It's bothering me because I care about his well-being. You know, when I don't see someone, I don't care what the reason is. Even when I know that a person is, you know, TDY or a person is traveling on vacation. I know that Crystal's been gone for a couple weeks because she was doing the games out in Cincinnati. Here's the thing. Just because I know doesn't mean I'm not concerned. Why? Because like we talked about, how long can a part of the body remain alive when it's away from the body? You can put it on ice. You know, they've got great technology and new procedures and everything. But I cut your thumb off. Trust me, you'll miss it. You'll notice it. You may not think much about it, but it matters. You may think of it as a, you know, not so important part. I think about how Sharice's aunt, she had a procedure that came with being a woman. And she said how, you know what, it matters. You know, you think, oh, well, you know, I just want this thing gone because it's giving me some problems. It's giving me girly problems. And that's one of those things that you got to be concerned about. Yet, you don't tell everybody that you went out and had a procedure. I was talking to a friend who said they were going to get a vasectomy. It's really simple. You know, you just snip, snip, really, you know, it's outpatient. You're going about your business until it's time for you to have it. Okay, until it's time for you to start getting put under the knife and start getting cut. And see, that's the type of thing that, because that's a little bit intimate, that's a little bit personal, you don't share that with the whole world. But there are people that, even if we don't want to stand up here and make an announcement about it, there are people that want to know that you're okay. We want to know that your hysterectomy or partial hysterectomy went all right. We want to know that your problem with something else that may be kind of sensitive, you don't want to talk about, we still care. We just don't broadcast it. That's where it's talking about how certain parts of the body, you take special care to make sure that these things get addressed, they get dealt with, people know about them, people are praying about it, but we don't talk about it. Now, if we're talking about, hey, pray for his brother such and such to get a job, okay, guess what? A lot of times, that's just like, we want all the prayer warriors, like everybody, please. He's, and especially when the whole church knows, like, hey, man, that family's gone through a lot. You know, like I remember Jennifer Huffman telling me about when her house burned down and how it was like, I mean, the whole world knew it was in the paper. Like, it wasn't like it was a secret. So it's nothing to keep hidden about it. It wasn't like there was anything wrong. The point being is that there are certain things that need to be treated with confidence and special care. There are other things that don't require that, but the entire body should be concerned about it. The entire body should want to be praying about this thing, you know? And it really doesn't matter whether or not I know all the details. Because I don't need to know all the details. Somebody knows enough about the details to tell me you don't need to know all the details. But are we concerned? And that's why I was saying that even beyond, like, I don't know if you know, there's a couple who's been coming to worship with us probably for the past month or so. And one of the reasons why they've been coming here is because they've been driving a very long way to go to another church way up north. And the guy who he's pastor there, he told me, he said, man, I think it would be great. And I've recommended to them to come worship with you all. And I told him, you come highly recommended. I feel comfortable with the way the congregation is. But they were reluctant. They were reluctant because you're talking about getting to know new people in a new place. You don't know anybody. They kind of knew me and my wife and the kids a little bit, but they didn't really know us. They had a hard time getting to know people. And what has to happen is not me spending time with them and talking to them, but them sitting down and spending time with other people. You know, because there's a need there. There's several needs there that this church, this congregation, this part of the body could really help in, but they have to be confident. They have to not only trust God, but they have to feel like, you know what? If my head is itching, I'm going to scratch it. Somebody's going to come and scratch it. You know, if my nose is running, somebody in this church is going to go get a Kleenex and wipe my nose. You know, it's like you think of, see, Tanisha made that disgusting face. Guess what? Somebody's got to wipe me. I mean, somebody on your, some part of your body has to hopefully cover your nose when you sneeze. You know, something in the body has to be in tune enough and care enough to be able to take you into the shower and wash you off. There are all these different things, and we could go literally for days on allegories and examples of how the body works. But the larger point in all of this is, do we have equal concern for each part? Or is it out of sight, out of mind? When we leave here, do we care? Like something as simple as Jeannie saying, hey, I got this and I got this and I got that to do. Levada needs to make it to the doctor. Like, do I have equal concern? Like, it doesn't affect me. I don't have a doctor's appointment. But do we care about that? Is that something that matters? You know, I have school age kids. You know, Kay's like, hey, you know, my son is 45, even if he does act like a 5-year-old. He's 45 in reality. So he doesn't need notebooks and folders and pencils. And I don't need them either. But if my kids needed it, is that something that it concerns you enough? Because this is part of the body. And we've talked about this in the past, and I want to look at a little bit this going forward, not necessarily today, but the idea that we're a family. Because everybody didn't have the same family growing up. So sometimes family, while it may mean something great for the Maddoxes, may not mean the same thing for the Greens, you know, like everything could be different. And it's important that we understand that we have to look after one another and take care of one another and be able to support and love one another like a family should. And again, I know I keep coming back to this, that cannot be done by only looking at church by way of these four walls. You know, what the women's Bible study does on Wednesday morning at 11:30, I'm not a woman, so I will probably never be a card-carrying member of that women's Bible study, but I'm still concerned about it. I still care about it. If they need something, I'll do it. If they need me to stand there at the door, I'd do it because I'm available most times at 11:30 on Wednesday, and it matters because it's going to help some other woman. And it may, by extension, help some other man, because I might, you know, they may be helping somebody's wife get their mind right and get it together and focus. And by extension, helping that man to see that, you know what, I can continue to have faith. We didn't touch on this much today. I'll get into it a little bit next week, but what I really want to focus on, and I'll just throw this out here as a little preview, I really want us to think about what it means to count heads and numbers versus counting families. Because one of the things that's very important to understand is that as a church, when I see Ben, I'm also, by extension, seeing his daughter, and I'm seeing his wife. You know, I can't just say, okay, well, we're going to do everything we can to take care of Ben and act like he doesn't have a family. Or CK and not be concerned about, well, how are things going with her son? I don't see your son every week. I don't see him at all. But am I concerned about what's going on with her son? Am I concerned about what's going on with Leroy? Am I concerned about what's going on with her grandkids? Am I concerned about the family? Because a lot of times what will happen is we'll look up there and we'll say, oh, there was only 44 people here. Or there were 73 people here. There were, you know, whatever number. But maybe it would help us as the body, as the church, if we looked at it, and instead of coming up with numbers, and I know practically impossible to do this, but how many families were here today? You know, because you might look and say there was five people. Well, that's a family. You know, which family was represented? And I, like I said, we'll talk about this next week a little bit, because whenever they would do the count, you know, the very popular passages where they talked about how, you know, the men in Acts 2, how they were baptized all at once. You know, a lot of times when they kept those numbers, they counted the men because that's what society did. But they didn't count all the wives. You know, when they talk about feeding all those thousands of people, they didn't always include in their numbers the people. If you go back to the Old Testament, they would essentially account for the family. They would account for this clan, this group, this household, as they would call it. Because what you would have is you'd have a man, and you may have a wife, and because of how their society was, you may have, you know, sub-wives and different names and different things they would call them, concubines. I was trying to keep it PG, man. But the point is, they would count their household. And see, a lot of times what happens is we think of individuals, and it's so bad when the church does, but we count butts and seats and we look at people and we say, okay, how many people are there? Or what are the numbers and how many people are showing up for worship? How many families are we impacting in Dothan? How many families know and are impacted by the reach of us here at the Dover Church of Christ? And so what I want us to consider is not just the names, not just the numbers, not just, okay, how many people have I talked to, but how many different families, how many married couples, how many groups of people are being reached and the church is having an impact on, not just sheer numbers. Because when you look at numbers, it's like, well, you know, people come and go, and you can always manipulate those. But the impact that God can have through us, his body, on families and on groups. Because it's one thing to say, you know, I met this person, they've given their life to God, they got baptized, great. Now, they have a family that they're now going to go back to. We looked at that last week with the woman at the well. See, that was one person that Jesus sat down at the well and talked to. That was one person that, because he did something totally different than what every other person was doing by going around, he had an impact on this one woman in this one society. But she went back and brought them all. She went back and got everybody. That is why it's so significant that we understand that even if we may, because of our jobs or our particular social situation or our financial situation, we may not have time to really spend a whole lot of time. Everybody isn't able to just every day or all day spend time with people and have lunch with people and go out and socialize and be able to network with people. But you may have that one neighbor. You may have that one coworker, that one friend that you do have that time, that special relationship with. What is your impact on them? And see beyond that one person. See that God may want you to reach that one person. He has specifically placed you in that situation to be able to impact that one person, not because of what you may be able to do. I appreciate it so much. Sunday school a couple weeks ago when Denise was talking about how she feels sometimes she's inadequate and that she's not properly equipped to be able to do certain things. And yet it's so important for us to understand, as we talked about, overcoming that fear, overcoming that shame, overcoming that attitude of I'm inadequate, because I'm convinced. OK, you don't have to tell me. I don't know when it's going to happen. I don't know why. I don't care. Denise is going to impact somebody. She is going to have an incredible impact on somebody. And it's always the person who thinks that they have the least to give that's going to impact that one person, and then 500 people just show up and decide, you know what, we're going to change the whole state of Delaware because we want to love God. And it's going to be Denise. And everybody's like, wow, I did not see that coming. God's like, yeah, you didn't see Gideon coming. You didn't see Moses coming. You didn't see any of these other things coming, because it's important that we look beyond just our limitations, the things we can't do, and see that, you know, as I talked about it, like, as much as there's certain parts of your body you don't think about, you may not think they're important. You may not think your pinky is important. You may not ever use your pinky to dial your phone. Let that building collapse on you, and the only thing you can do is reach out with your pinky and dial that phone. All of a sudden, the pinky is your whole body. Everybody, everything in the body is like, come on, pinky, you can do it. You can do it. Call somebody, get help. Go get Lassie, do something. And it's that pinky, right? That one little itty bitty part of your hand that you never think much about is kind of sometimes in the way, especially when it's cold. It's the first one to get frostbite. But when you got a dial and that's the only thing you can reach with, suddenly the pinky gets all the glory. And that's where we have to understand that it's not our glory, it's to God's glory. So that's what we're going to deal with over the next several weeks, is talking about how we view the church, how we view the body, and understanding that one of the biggest things we have to overcome is our understanding that the church and the body and the impact of the body is beyond these four walls. It has to be. We have to take the church like Jesus did. We have to take the church beyond these walls. Were there any questions or comments or feedback? Anything you'd like to share?